Today on Mr. Media, we've got the audio from St. Petersburg Times media critic Eric Deggan's interview with VH1 celebrity rehab star and new HLN talk show host, Dr. Drew Penske. Stick around. So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be the Mr. Media Network. And this is a Mr. Media interview. You know, MrMedia.com, MrMedia.com. Stop by and check it out. There are more than 900 archived celebrity and pop culture interviews for your listening pleasure. The show is brought to you today by Audible. Audible is offering Mr. Media listeners a free audiobook download and a 14-day trial offer to give you a chance to check out their very cool service. I love listening to books on tape. If you've never tried it before, actors or sometimes the authors themselves read to you. It's great for the commute, the beach, or even unwinding before bed. You can choose a free audiobook from Audible's enormous library of titles by HLN hosts, including I Want, My Journey from Addiction and Overconsumption to a Simpler, Honest Life by Jane Velez Mitchell, Objection by Nancy Grace, and When You Need a Lift But Don't Want to Eat Chocolate, Pay a Shrink, or Drink a Bottle of Gin by Joy Behar. Here's an excerpt from I Want, read by the author, Jane Velez Mitchell.
I often felt like window dressing and didn't really know why anchoring was considered so prestigious. To me, reporting was the most important role. As an anchor, I knew I needed to connect with the viewers so that they would regard me as their friend, someone who would give them the straight story. In this job, I needed to be my true self. And this is where I flunked. I didn't have the faintest clue about what it meant to be authentically me. I watched other news anchors and copied what they did. I simply didn't have an authentic concept of myself to fall back on. At this point, I didn't even know I should be trying to figure out who I was. The closest I came to understanding how to be myself could be summed up by the old showbiz saying, "The key to success is knowing how to fake being real."
To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/radio. Again, that's audibletrial.com/radio for your free audiobook. And now, here's media critic Eric Deggan's of the St. Petersburg Times with his interview of VH1 celebrity rehab star and new HLN talk show host Dr. Drew Penske. To read more of Eric's work, you can follow his blog, The Feed, at tampabay.com/blogs/media.
Hi, Eric. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm good.
I would imagine you'd be fatigued. It sounds like you're doing so much.
It's funny. I have to tell everybody that, what was fatiguing was that we just finished a run of celebrity rehab, and that's a consuming, very stressful 24/7 responsibility for a few weeks. Everything after that is relatively easy.
Wow.
And by the same token, people don't understand that practicing medicine is so much more stressful than creating media. It's just there's no comparison even. So I'm always surprised. People go, "Oh my God, how stressful!" I go, no, you understand. This is vacation.
Especially people who create media. I think maybe we tend to overemphasize.
I guess it's a lot less stressful than medicine. That's all I can say.
Once you've helped Gary Busey through rehab, I guess everything.
Well, there's that. But more, when you're practicing medicine, you may be spending 15 minutes with a patient with congestive heart failure, but there's, records that have to be kept up. You have to deal with the insurance companies. You have to beg for further care. You have to defend to the attorneys. You have to educate the family. You have to create an aftercare plan. So every 15 minutes carries about 2.5 hours of responsibility going forward. And that's accumulated every day. And people just don't quite get that. Right. I didn't, when I was practicing full time, I never sat down for lunch or dinner for many, many years.
Wow.
So,
wow.
Yeah.
Well, here's to you slowing down.
Yeah, there you go. That's what I'm talking about, Eric. That's what I'm saying.
So I was actually going to start with a funny question, which was, are you ready to take Charlie Sheen? Because I hear he's challenged you to a fist fight, is what I hear.
I'd heard that. He wants to actually bend. And a boxing promoter, actually, I heard, even turned up. No, I'm no interested in pugilistic interaction with Mr. Sheen. But you know, I sort of said what I had to say about that and wish him well, and that's that. I'd be happy to. I'd love to sit down and talk to him because it's going to play out. It's not going to be a static thing. It's going to, you know, it's a serious deal.
Is it unusual to see somebody in his position sort of be functional as long as he has been? I mean, he seems...
No, actually not, because with men particularly, job is absolutely the last place that's affected. And you know, like when we're treating physicians, you know, once they start having trouble at the workplace, we know we are in an advanced situation.
Wow.
So, it's not uncommon at all. So this idea that, oh, I function at work, therefore I don't have a problem, is anathema to the truth.
Wow. So, you know, it's interesting to me. I don't know if it's coincidence or there's some causal relationship that we're seeing so much more of you at a time when we seem to be talking about addiction and its impact in society more than ever.
It's sort of what drew me into the field. It's the problem of our time. It really is. It's so pervasive. I mean, somewhere around 60% of every outpatient mental health visit, a significant percentage of any.
Hello?
Hang on 1 second. Hold on 1 second.
Oh, sure.
It's something funny. Hold on. My earpiece crapped out on me. Significant percentage of essentially all trauma cases in the emergency room are addiction related.
Wow.
So it's exceedingly common. And so that's kind of what got me interested in the field. And so yeah, it's such a common and pervasive problem. However, that is not going to be the focus of this HLN project at all. I'm certainly, you know, I'm going to be using my clinical sensibilities and the kinds of things that I'm interested in. Hold on again. Okay, I'm going to come to bear those sorts of topics, and certainly my head that is trained in addiction medicine is going to be a big part of the way I approach things, but the topics are going to be broad and wide.
So give me a sense of what actually we'll see or what kind of broadcast you hope to present.
Well, it's set up, part of it is set up very much like Larry King, where you have a desk and we'll have panels and interviews, and some of it is sort of more one-on-one kind of people at the center of the story we're hoping to kind of get into, you know, and the idea of the show is, you know, who's doing what and why do they do what they do? Because that really doesn't ever get discussed in a meaningful way, in my opinion. I'm interested in talking to people that have been through the kinds of things that are happening in the news and have recovered from it. Like if I were going to talk about the Japanese crisis, I would interview people that have been through traumatic natural disasters, but differentiate that from, say, returning vets from Afghanistan who have PTSD versus people who had traumatic childhoods, and really look at the different manifestations of trauma in people. That's the kind of thing I'd like to get into.
Right. So do you see yourself helping bring kind of a medical expertise to the situations that we haven't had in
yeah.
coverage before?
Exactly. I mean, that's a reasonable way to put it. And just sort of, and again, exploring, I'd like to get the people themselves at the center of the story, and not just, it's amazing, you know, I guess it's symptomatic of the fact when I get, even whenever I get prepped by television producers or reporters about, you know, somebody I'm going to interview, they want to tell me sort of these superficial blushes with the story. Oh, they've had a career, their careers and their, you know, what they had for breakfast. And none of that means anything. That's just not what motivates people. That's not how they work. That's just a story that today's circumstance they've gotten themselves into. The depths of what a person is feeling and motivating them is something far, far different. And people just don't have a language for that.
Wow.
So I want to get into that.
Well, and if you want to do this with a different story, that's fine, but it does make me think of Charlie Sheen, and I've written plenty of pieces criticizing the coverage that I've seen there.
Oh, no kidding.
What's your sense about what people most misunderstand or what the media is getting wrong about that?
Well, the most misunderstood piece is that this is not just some guy goofing around. I mean, here's the part that I get confused by, which is look, if he was holding up his arm with a rash on it, I could commentate on what that's likely to be. I mean, and some for some reason, when it comes to human behavior, people get uncomfortable. Like, you have to know the person intimately. No, when we study medicine and we study psychiatry, doctor stands up and goes, there's a 37-year-old white male who hasn't slept in 3 weeks. The speech is pressured and tangential. He was using cocaine a week ago. He's infectious and grandiose, talking about special powers and privileges, and you just go, okay, it's a hypomanic patient. We just know. I don't have to give the guy's name. You don't have to see the guy. And so, you know, people don't understand that you can characterize what's going on with somebody, and it's serious, and then you can prognosticate about what's likely to happen and how it's likely to go. And then, more importantly, the way we treat people with behavioral problems in general, how is it different than, you know, putting somebody up there with a physical disability or with some other maybe cognitive disability and kind of making fun of them and pointing at them? It's really troubling that we do that. And so that is going to be something I'm going to want to talk about when we get this show going, is, you know, why people, why viewers, why audiences do what they do. I did a couple practice shows, not even practice shows, like a couple practice segments. I found myself turning to camera and talking to the audience and going, you need to think about this.
Right.
So I would like that. That is the kind of thing I'd like to do, is challenge the audience to think about why they do what they do.
And, you know, I know this is going to sound like a weird analogy, but I remember interviewing Dave Chappelle not too long after he kind of came back from that weird exile where he left the country and everything. And he kind of said one reason why he left doing that show was because he felt like the jokes he was doing was enabling people's prejudices in a way that they weren't getting the satire. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I wonder sometimes, I mean, do you worry about, you know, you're trying to discuss this for one reason, but is it just making us feel better about looking at Charlie Sheen or looking at the Balloon Boy or looking at these
I don't know that I can change what people do. I just want them to think about it. I mean, if I get somebody to pause at least and sort of, I sort of think of it as being knowledgeable media consumers, of being a consumer of media that's enlightened at least. Right. You may still be motivated to do it, and you may still kind of, you know, just let me drive by a freeway accident, you still might slow down and look. But at least feel bad about it. At least think about it. You know, I mean, you know what I mean? It's better for your soul just to admit that, geez, this probably, and if you think about it, maybe you'll learn something about it and from it, as opposed to just gawking.
Oh, yeah.
So that's sort of my thing. I don't know that I can change things, really. It's such a powerful trend we're in. But my reason for getting involved in media many years ago was just this naive notion that I could, that it was radio back then. And I've been broadcasting radio for 30 years. And I thought, you know, radio's been such a powerful force in the wrong direction. Certainly it could be a powerful force in the right direction. It has to be. It just doesn't make any sense. It could only be a negative. So if those of us that are interested can climb into it and try to change it from the inside, maybe we can move it in the right direction. So that's sort of been my naive little plan for 30 years.
Well, hopefully you've changed a few people's minds. And it's hard to know where the line is. You know, when I see somebody like Gary Busey on Celebrity Apprentice, part of me thinks, well, you know, you can't tell the guy to stop working. But the reason he's on that show is because he's kind of altered from the Busey that we knew when he was, you know, a fully functional actor. And it just, if you talked about seeing somebody with a rash, it feels like making fun of somebody with a broken leg.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And again, I don't mind people going, whoa, Gary, but to make fun of or to sit in judgment of, So Gary's a great guy, and he has a significant liability with his right head injury. And why is that okay to make fun of that? That's not okay to me.
So have you thought very much about sort of the cable news competition that you'll be getting into? This is kind of a hothouse of competition here in a way that maybe you haven't faced before as a TV personality.
I guess that's true. I haven't. I leave that kind of to the producers and the network executives. I know it's, I know what I do is consistent with the direction HLN wants to go. I'm obviously going to be up against Pierce and Hannity and things like that. And, I'm going to be very different than all that. And that's all I can do is do what I do and do it differently and hopefully do it well. And maybe we'll scrape a little bit of that audience off other people. It'd be interesting if we did.
What's your sense about how what you do is going to fit into HLN's direction?
Well, HLN is very much about the stories that matter to the viewer. What they're fascinated by people and people's behaviors and what makes people do what they do. I mean, obviously, Jane has one perspective, Nancy has another, and I'm going to be the only male in their primetime lineup, and I'm in an entirely different place, but I'm still looking at the people, and I have, specific kinds of points of view pertinent to whatever story that pops up. So I think that's consistent with HLN brand.
Do you see yourself getting to the point where you might sit in on news coverage, or if something happens, are you kind of going to turn it over to the journalists?
I'm not sure I understand the question. Am I going to show up and commentate?
Well, no, I don't. Sometimes this is a bad example, but sometimes when news might break while Larry King was on, they would make the show kind of about the news coverage and kind of, they might convene a panel, but he'd also be introducing correspondents and, he'd be part of the news mix in a way. And I think Pierce is starting to do that a little bit, too.
I could see that happen. We don't have a specific plan for that, but I definitely want to be relevant to what's happening now. We're even talking about doing the show live at some point, which I would love to do. As such, yeah, that could happen. I don't know how we produce that and how that would work, but that, to me, anything that adds immediacy and excitement to the coverage, I'm all about.
Cool. I spent some time asking you about Charlie Sheen, but you talked about Japan. I wonder, are there some other topics out there that you're sort of itching to get a hold of, or that you think your show would be a particularly great showcase for?
Well, I was telling the producers yesterday that I'm interested in I'm not going to slam anybody, but I'm interested in creating heat, and conflict in the conversation. And I know, for instance, California's got a big, I haven't read the story yet, but I heard the no hate thing, the Prop 8 thing is coming around again.
Right.
And to me, that is such an important and interesting topic that goes at not just the issue of a minority's right, but how direct a democracy do we want to be? And while people don't want to see, one thing I've learned about me is they don't really want to hear my political views. I certainly am ready to dig into political stories that have very profound philosophical tags or hooks. That's a profound issue to me, and people aren't looking at it fully, and so I'd love to dig into that one.
Yeah, and I think sort of the rationale for resisting something like that is it's sort of rooted in doctors, saying that being gay is not a dysfunction. Being gay is not a psychological illness. So
I don't want to talk about, I would like to have the conversation to me gets completely distorted by people trying to define marriage. And I don't think that's the story. The story is a majority taking away the rights of a minority.
Right.
By signing their name to a piece of paper. That is what the founding fathers feared the most, and here it is happening. And who knows whose rights are going next? Which minority is going to have their rights extinguished because the majority just feels like it? Take it away from gay, take it away from marriage, and have that conversation. That's one that just isn't happening out there fully, and I'd like to have that conversation. How direct a democracy do we want to be? Now you're taking me way over in one direction in terms of the kinds of topics that I might get into. Mm-hmm. By the same token, I would happy to talk to Lindsay Lohan today too and talk about the court case.
Right.
That's the range of what I'd like to get into here.
Well, one thing I wanted to ask too. I mean, I think we're going to sort of be refighting this healthcare legislation conversation.
I would love to get into that a bit.
I'm sure people ask you all the time about it. What have you been telling people about this issue? How do you think you would handle it on your show?
Well, I don't know. Here's what I say. It's so complicated, I can't even come up with an opinion. I know the American College of Physicians is for it, and they're an organization that I respect and adhere to very closely. So the safe bet is I would agree with them. But it's really so complicated, and people don't know how bad the system is now. They just don't know. They don't get it. It's just a disaster. And it's going to, you know, there's going to be no doctor soon because no one's going to want to deal with this. I mean, you got to be out of your mind to go into general practice, you know, primary care these days. I would probably take it from the angle of how this is what I have a strong opinion about, is how primary care has been absolutely crushed. And they give tons of lip service to restoring it and its position and whatnot, and then absolutely do nothing. My entire career I've been hearing that rhetoric, and absolutely nothing has changed. And until you get, in my opinion, until you get a really high-quality primary care system in place, you got nothing, because that's the linchpin of the functioning entire system. Excuse me one second, Eric. I was going to park over here in there, but there's no, yeah. Can I park somewhere else in the meantime? Okay, thanks. Thank you. I'm back.
Oh, no problem. So which gig are you heading to now?
I'm going to HLM. I'm meeting with producers and trying to structure this thing. And, you know, like any new show, you really don't know what you're up against until you get up on its feet. I'm hoping that we find a story that we can own, you know, that really becomes our story, and that we can sort of get back to almost every day that will be of interest to people. You know, something that's evolving, you know, like the Michael Jackson case, is something that's in the news on a regular basis that we can help people understand in a way that they can't get anywhere else.
And you know, there's going to be people who will look at that and say you're kind of trafficking in tabloid news, that you're not really talking about an issue of substance?
If that seems tabloidy, we probably would drift away from it. But I mean, people are interested in the story, and it's not being reported or digested properly, I'm likely to get into it, whatever it is.
And, you know, the one snarky thing I always see, you know, written about you as well is, well, you know, here's a guy who talks about addictions, but he seems to be addicted to Fang. So I'm going to ask you, what do you say to people, to critics who say that about you, and is there any rehab for that?
No, not that I'm aware of, many of the criticisms I get, I find really bizarre and poorly thought out. How do you have a career in television without being public? I don't understand that. I mean, I for many years resisted media. I did it sort of peripherally. I never used my real last name. I always organized my shows around my medical practice, and everyone was carefully instructed that I had to have, you know, 5 days of practice, and anything they wanted to squeeze in around that was fine with me. But about 10 years ago, I started thinking, well, maybe, you know, I've had these amazing opportunities. Maybe I should really focus on media, and that should be my next stage of my career, is to use media to make a difference. And so I spent the next 10 years, you know, finding partners and letting go of responsibilities and really crafting my practice so I could create the time to do this. And that's what I've been doing for the last 3 or 4 years, just media. And I'm, you know, I'm really at a stage of my career where that's what I'm focused on. I don't understand how I could do that without some degree of public, you know, presence. I don't understand how you would do that.
Right.
So it's a very curious criticism.
Well, maybe it's taken people a while to sort of catch up to the idea that you are leaving behind being a practicing physician and focusing much more on the media stuff, because we're used to seeing you do both.
Yeah, well, I'm still doing both. I'm still going to practice a little bit, but no, my primary focus. I mean, these are big responsibilities. These shows. I mean, I cannot. There's no way I could do them part time. And so, you know, and in terms of other things, again, it's very curious. They're very curious criticism.
So do you have a sense of where you can take what you're doing to the next level, or where the endpoint is for you? I mean, right now, by my count, you're doing four shows, right? Life Changers, Love Line, Celebrity Rehab, and HLN.
Yeah, yeah. There's never been a blueprint for what I do. I doors open, they seem interesting, I walk in and try to make the best of, make something worthwhile. The same applies to now. I can't imagine doing more than I'm doing. I didn't plan on this. These things just came together at the last second. All of a sudden I was doing two more programs and, found a way to figure out how to do it, and now we're going to try to do it. There is no next stage. I'd like to do a good job at this one, please.
It's interesting to me because, when it was known that there was kind of a primetime slot on HLN, everybody was sort of tossing around the usual sort of news, journalism, cable TV kind of people that we thought might be in that slot. I don't think anybody said Dr. Drew. So how did that happen? And when you were approached by it, did you have the same reaction, or did you immediately think this was something that you'd be interested in doing?
I was in New York, and Tim Johns, who was the head of HR at the time, asked me to have a meeting with him, and he had thought of me for some reason. And at that point, I had sat in and hosted for Larry King a couple times. And they then asked me to sit in for Joy and host that show. And here's what people don't know about me. Whenever they ask me what's the favorite thing I've done in media, that's the very favorite thing I've ever done, is sitting in and running those shows.
Wow.
I mean, I've been in radio for 30 years. I'm a radio guy at heart. And to take my radio sensibilities and try to create interesting dynamics in a television talk format, that's organic for me. That's where I like to go. And so that was my very, very favorite thing to do. And so when he then started talking, seriously about, was this something I'd like to do? I'm like, yeah, I love this kind of thing. Originally, he and I discussed something more interactive, with more phone and sort of, technology interaction, and we're still trying to incorporate that into what we want to do. Scott Safon has a slightly different vision, so we're kind of going a little bit of a different direction, but that was where we started, and all of a sudden we were doing it.
Wow. And I know we're mostly talking HLN, but can you tell me a little bit about the Celebrity Rehab, a bit that you've just finished? What stands out for you? What should we look for?
It was a very challenging season. I am still extremely caught up in those patients, and they've got the best aftercare plan we've ever put together for a group, but now getting them to do it is quite challenging.
Wow.
It's a very diverse group who was extremely resistant. There were a lot of twists and turns in terms of what was motivating people to be there, who would belong there and who didn't. We had to sort of figure that all out. We ended up, though, with a very cohesive group that, once again, people were deeply changed by the experience. You have to watch it to really see what I'm talking about. Several people really needed treatment. I mean, like Jennifer Kuiper and Bai Ling and Bernie Jackson. These people, and even Abba's again back in, was in trouble again. Thank God we were doing the show right at that time. And they, of course, in needing treatment, really responded very, very well. So that's good news.
And how long did it take you to figure out that Michelle Salahi was full of it?
we treated her respectfully as a patient, and she deserved an evaluation like anybody else. And people have sat in those seats and told me they're not addicts or they're not using, and then their urines are dirty and they seize an hour later. This happened to you before.
Right.
So it took a while to evaluate somebody and make sure there aren't real concerns. And in the meantime, you treat them respectfully and like a patient, and that's that.
Was this the first time? I have
another interview right at 10:30. So.
Oh, okay. The last question then. Is this the first time that somebody came in saying they were an addict when they weren't, as opposed to the other way around?
I've had that in treatment before where they end up with something called pseudo-addiction, but I don't can't think of anything like that happening at Celebrity Rehab I can think of. But, I have to kind of sit down and squint. There may be enough people that I have to think through everything I want.
Right.
Oh, yeah, I got to run here.
All right, thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it, and good luck.
Bye. Yeah, thanks. Bye.
Folks, you can catch Dr. Drew Pinsky's new talk show, Dr. Drew, every weeknight at 9 p.m. on HLN. For more original interviews with America's top talk show hosts, including Jane Velez Mitchell and criminal profiler Pat Brown, surf over to our main website, MrMedia.com, MRMedia.com. If you've enjoyed today's show, subscribe for free to Mr. Media via email, RSS, or iTunes, and you'll never miss another show. You can also download our new free Mr. Media mobile app in the Android market. Show your support of Mr. Media by supporting our sponsors, including Audible. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/radio. Again, that's audibletrial.com/radio for your free audiobook. If you've got an idea for a guest, a comment on today's show, or would like to advertise on Mr. Media, email me directly at bob@mrmedia.com. You can also call our 24-hour listener line at 1-727-498-4711. Some messages may be used in an upcoming show. You can also follow Mr. Media on Facebook, Twitter, or our new YouTube video channel. Thanks for joining us today. Really appreciate you sharing a piece of your day with Mr. Media. Thanks for listening.
I'm saxophonist Mindy Abair, and you're listening to Mr. Media. Maybe watching, huh?
Hey, folks. You can hear Mr. Media while on the go now with Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher is a free news and talk mobile app available for your smartphone, whether you use an iPhone, iPod Touch, Android, BlackBerry Curve, or Palm Pre. And when you download Stitcher to hear Mr. Media today, you have a chance to win some real money. Downloading is quick and easy. Just find Stitcher in your smartphone's app store. Download it. It's free. Takes seconds. Then, during registration, hit the promo code box and enter Mr. Media, that's MR Media, to get automatically entered to win $100. The latest episode of Mr. Media will be waiting for you in Stitcher's favorites right on your phone. You'll get access to lots of other amazing shows, too, always available to you on demand, no syncing. Some of my favorites include WTF with Mark Maron, Plus One Per Diem with Kevin Smith, and The Nerdist with Chris Hardwick. It's all free and all instant to you on Stitcher Smart Radio. And don't forget to win the money. Enter promo code MrMedia, MR Media, when you register. And thanks for listening.